Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on episode 35, Life in Sparta. In 810 BC, or thereabouts, chaos was made into order in the land of Laconia in Greece. From this rose the city-state of much prominence, Sparta, city of warriors. This is the second of a three-part series about Sparta. The first part detailed the origins of Sparta. In the second part, we'll look at what life was like in Sparta if you were a man, and in the third part, if you were a woman. So, Dan, why don't you tell us more about this city-state and the life therein?
Oh, yes, I will. First, I want to say that this series is the most popular videos on our YouTube channel, Fan of History on YouTube. You should be subscribing to that channel. And you're not, because a lot more people are listening to this podcast than subscribing to the YouTube channel.
Visuals are fun, people.
Part three that we're going to do next week is the most popular video. And I think that's of about 150 videos on the YouTube channel. So women in Sparta. But that's for next week. This week we are going to talk about life as a man in Sparta. We're going to talk about how the Spartan state is organized, why the Spartans are such good warriors, and what kind of religion they have. But before I dive into this, I figured I would ask a random person from Texas what he knows about life in Sparta as a man. And that's you, Brennan.
Oh, that's me. I am from Texas, still here today recording this. Life in Sparta. Well, I don't have a lot to go on except what popular culture. Frank Miller wrote a comic book turned into a movie called 300.
It's such a good comic book and movie.
Yeah, it's amazing. And okay, if I take out the crazy drama of it, what I can kind of distill from that, if I just assume that that's an exaggeration, it seemed like, just like the word implies, Sparta, everyone lived in these like perfectly square houses. You know, everybody. It's almost seemed like a very conformist society. But they led crazy, like, ritualistic lives. Like the kids were, they would get rid of, like, kids who were defective in some way. Like if they had birth defects or if, you know, some sort of mental defect. And it's like they would send children off to be taught in these war camps and like, kind of like the wards of these you know, terrible people. It seemed like they'd treat them like they just used them. It seemed really rough and harsh. I don't know. It doesn't seem too great, but it, you know, they were super strong and very loyal to their city state. So there has to be something good about it. So that's my general impression. It seems like very warlike, you know, very conformist society. You know, everybody did the same things. Even if it wasn't religious based, it seemed like they just believed very strongly in the way they lived.
That's all of that is generally correct, but we'll talk about it in detail here.
All right.
And I'll bet you will get a couple of surprises at least.
I think so.
First, I think we have to define the goal of a Spartan man's life. So the number one thing in a Spartan man's life is that he has to serve the Spartan state. This is at the same time, a very democratic and a very dictatorial state. Sparta, the state, is everything, and everything you do has to be in the interest of the Spartan state and the Spartan way of life.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone does not conform, they have to die or be exiled. And the worst thing that the Spartan state could have is a free thinker or a weakling, and you have to get rid of them.
That's so harsh.
Yes, and it's also extremely conservative. It's conservative to a degree that we really cannot understand today. They make the Assyrians look like free thinkers. And that's why we can do this three-part show at this point about Sparta, while we cannot do it about any other city-state, because the other city-states evolve. They change their way of running the city-state. They have new ideas and act on them, but the mm-hmm. Spartans just, this is what Lycurgus said, their semi-mythical founder, and this is the way we have done things forever. So when something changes in the Spartan state, it's worthy of great notice, because it does happen like once or twice in 600 years.
Wow.
But generally, there are three social classes, and the social classes are extremely important. You can be an equal, and that's the highest social... there are no noblemen or something. You can be an equal,
mm-hmm.
and then you are truly equal. We'll go into detail about how equal you are if you're an equal. But if you're the king of Sparta, or one of the kings of Sparta, you are still just an equal. You can also be free, but non-equal. And there are many different ways to end up in this weird position. And then you can also be a slave. But the Spartan slaves are very special and not like other slaves. They are the helots. And they are different than other slaves in many ways. And I will show you how in this episode as well. But let's get into this then. It has been depicted as one of the hardest slavery societies of all time. And there's a lot of strange things happening in the relations between the Spartan equals mm-hmm. and helots. But it's also pretty nice for a slave society for the slaves. So it's weird. Sparta strikes me as a very, very different place. And it's different even from all the other city-states, even from the Dorian city-states that were founded sort of with the same origin as Sparta, like Argos. Sparta is still very different. And the state remains unchanged until it falls spectacularly in the 4th century BC. And I hope we get to talk about that at some point in the future, because the end of Sparta is pretty interesting. There is never any tyrant in Sparta. We'll see when Greece gets taken over by the tyrants. But Sparta is never there. They don't never have a tyrant, and they will always be the force in Greece that fights the tyrants. And kingship in itself becomes an archaic feature in Greece. It disappears almost all over Greece, but never in Sparta. Sparta always has the two kings.
How does that work out?
Just... Well, in 300 is pretty spectacular. They were right. They were lucky to have another king.
Right.
When Leonidas died. Yeah. Okay, let's now assume that you are a Spartan man getting born. And your life goal is to become... Your life goal is to serve the Spartan state, but you want to be one of the equals. And if you fail at any point, you will become someone who is free but not an equal, probably, or dead.
Right.
So first then you get born, and someone is looking at you, thinking, is this boy fit to live? And you are brought before the elders. And you are not thrown off a cliff. That's a myth. They have actually excavated in Sparta and looked for this cliff and a lot of baby skeletons there, but they never found them.
What a morbid thing to look for.
Yeah, like, so it's probably exposure.
Oh, yeah.
So what they do then is that you just take the child and put him in the wilderness, and then the child dies or is stolen by someone and becomes a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Probably by some other Greek, because the Spartans did not get their slaves this way. If you're a girl, we'll talk about girls next time, but mm-hmm. girls are not judged this way.
Oh.
Because women are in many ways more important than men in Sparta. But during your early life, then, up to 7 years, you are taught, among other things, you are athletic games, or you just have to do, being an athletic little kid is encouraged. And you also have to be, you're taught courage and fortitude above all things. So you have to be a brave little kid. That's good. That only time you spend with your family, with your mother, it's up to the age of 7, if you're a boy. Because at 7, the agoge happens to you. And this is the Spartan way of raising men. And it's pretty intense. Because it is military school.
Right.
You say goodbye to your family. And you cannot see your family very often. You might get it as a reward. The requirements for getting into the agoge is a little unclear, and it seems to be the case that at some points foreigners have been able to put their kids in the agoge system.
Huh.
So if you are a friend of Sparta, you might get your son raised as a Spartan. But you probably lose him in the process, and he probably becomes a Spartan during this intense brainwashing procedure that happens during the agoge. So, in this system, in the agoge, you learn to obey the system, but you also have to learn to be clever. So, first you get harsh training, but there is no military training. There is no drilling. There is no fighting with weapons. There's just sports, and team games. It's all team spirit, work for the team, etc.
Right.
It's extremely strict, and you have to obey the rules. But after a while, you realize that the rules aren't very good. So a phase in your education is that you have to realize that you have to break the rules because you're not getting enough food. And there is like food that can be stolen. So you have to learn to steal and not get caught.
So, and, this is crazy. You're taught how important rules are, but then with a little nudge going, rules? Screw those guys.
Yes, and you're not allowed to meet girls, for example, but you can possibly sneak out and meet girls when you become a teenager and something. And yeah, and you will be, everyone will be, wow, you snuck out of the school. You're really cool. You're not allowed to wear shoes, and you probably wear very little clothing.
Mm-hmm.
You learn to take pride in pain and hardship. So it's like pain and hardship all the time.
Wow.
It's like training for the Navy SEALs or something, but right. You are 7
but
years old.
Seven.
Get into this.
This seems like it sucks.
You are trained specifically in boxing, swimming, wrestling, javelin throwing. Okay, there's a weapon.
Yeah, there's one.
But it's more of the sport of javelin throwing. The discus, and also in unarmed combat. Well, boxing and wrestling is unarmed combat. Maybe you train with some weapons. But it's definitely not the focus. You are also exposed to the elements. You learn to suffer pain and hardship in extreme cold and extreme heat. And you are, of course, rigorously flogged. So you learn to endure pain. And then you get this older mentor. You get a guy who is already, I think, at least 18 or 20.
Yeah.
Who will be your role model because you don't get to see your father. And a very common misconception about the agogi is that this man will rape you. I read that everywhere.
Wow.
This is a homosexual relationship, and it's definitely not. Because in the next episode, we will deal with Spartan homosexuality.
Okay.
And we will learn that the Spartans are the worst homophobes the worst the world has ever seen.
Wow.
So if you get the idea that you can rape your adept here, you are dead. One thing that happens to Sparta is that you don't get to eat good food. And that's not only the agoge, it's your whole life.
Okay.
You never get to enjoy any decent food because that's weak. So there is a special event in Sparta for people who are still in the agoge that I have to mention because it's so bizarre. Because the Spartans will get one cheese. Once a year, they will get a nice, good-looking cheese.
Cheese?
Yes.
Like...
Because cheese is way too good to eat to be allowed in Sparta normally. And then there'll be the race for the cheese between young boys. And this is a very popular event in Sparta, so everybody gathers around, but they are not only spectators. Because these poor boys have to run across the city to an altar upon which is the cheese.
Okay.
And everybody who is there has the task of whipping and beating the boys while they try to get to the cheese. So it's a gauntlet. And... the way to win this race is to get to be the first one to get to the altar and bleed on it. So you have to be injured to win. So you can't just run past everybody who tries to beat you up because you have to stay and take your beating
right.
to the degree that you bleed. So you can actually bleed on the altar and get the cheese.
That's insane.
Yes. And, it's wow. just one example from the agoge system for young boys. And when you get out of this system at the age of 18, you have spent 11 years just taking pain and hardship every day. And you are completely brainwashed. You know no other reality. You lost your intense connections to your family. And you are just, I will serve Sparta. I will endure pain. And you are extremely fit if you have survived.
I was about to say you'd be in the top physical form of any human on the planet at that point.
Yes, and that's no exaggeration. That's actually the case, I think. And you still don't have the option of dropping out of the system. You will get that option a bit later. But you can't. This, every boy has to do this. There's no way out.
Wow.
So you're now 18.
Yep.
And now it's time for military training. So you have 2 years, two intense years of military training. And this makes them the agogi looks like kindergarten, which it is. So now you, things get even worse. You still have all these pain and hardships, but now you have to focus on drill mainly. So this is where the Spartans, they still don't have the phalanx.
Okay.
810 BC, but they will get the phalanx soon. And even before the phalanx, the focus here is on drilling. It's on moving as a unit, moving with your team. And it's still, there's still not a lot of weapons training. And actually the Spartans never do a lot of weapons training because their focus is always on being physically fit, being able to fight longer than anyone else.
So even if you're not the best swordsman, just because you can sit there and swing it for, you know, 3 to 4 times as long, you just outlast them.
Yeah, and them keeping your formation, being a part of the teams, so then they will tire out everyone else on the battlefield. Okay, that's the 2 years between 18 and 20. There's not a lot to say about that. They are extremely boring then. And you have to shave rigorously because you have not earned the right to wear a beard. And the beard is extremely important to the Spartans. And for some reason, these beards get cut in all the depictions of the Spartans. But if you have a beard, you are truly dangerous. You should fear the Spartans with the beards. And having a beard is a right that you have to earn. And these guys, not being 20 yet, haven't earned the right to wear the beard. But when you get to 20, you are allowed to have a beard and grow your hair long. So the Spartans actually look like guys with long hair and Amish-style beards. And this right to have a beard could be taken away from you if you don't perform as a Spartan should perform. But now you get the option of quitting. You get the option of saying, I hate this crap. I just want to be a free citizen of Spartan. I don't care about being an equal. And the way you quit is to shave your beard. Okay. And then everybody can see that you are a coward and that you have quit and you're not an equal and you are less worthy than everybody else. So the beard is the symbol of being on the road to being an equal or becoming an equal or being an equal. And when you get to be 20, then you become the mentor of a boy who is still in the first phase. He's between 7 and 18 years old.
As we saw earlier.
Then you become his role model and father figure.
Right.
And, of course, you will give him a bit of pain and hardship then, so he learns.
Sure.
But don't rape him.
No. Yeah, was that a corporal offense or a... Yeah, you were the...
Definitely. And now you live your life in the barracks with the other soldiers. So the phase between 20 and 30 is... This is like... Military training is over. This is military service.
Mm-hmm.
And you are allowed to marry.
Okay.
You're between 20 and 30. But you cannot live with your family. You cannot even eat a meal with your family. Because your family is they are your brothers,
right.
Other warriors. And you could marry, but it's extremely hard because Spartan women really don't want to marry someone who's not an equal. And you are not an equal yet. Even if you are the best 29-year-old soldier in Sparta, you are not an equal.
Wow, how many would live to 29 with this kind of lifestyle?
I think a lot of them did, actually.
Wow. Incredible. I guess if they weren't actively being besieged. Okay. It seems so harsh.
Also, another weird right that you had to earn in Sparta, which is one of the greatest honors, is to have a tombstone. And the only way to get the tombstone so that you are remembered after your death is to die fighting for Sparta. It's the only way if you're a man. So you have to die in combat for Sparta. So even if you are the king of Sparta and you rule in the way the kings rule, we'll talk about that more later.
Okay.
If you're a super great king and everybody loves you and you rule for 50 years and then you die and they just throw away your body because you did not die in combat.
Do they throw it down in a bottomless pit?
No, there is no bottomless pit in Sparta.
This is Sparta.
But if you're 20, between 20 and 30, then you are allowed to go to war. And you are allowed to die in combat for Sparta. So that's great. Right? But now you become 30 years old. And this is the great important point in a Spartan man's life. Because at the age of 30, you are now judged of what you have accomplished. What have you done? Have you endured the agoge system? Have you done your military training? Have you fought for Sparta? Did you fight as a team? Did you protect your brothers? Did you eat every single meal with these guys? Did you avoid your family?
Wow.
And if you have served, if you have done this, you will become an equal, a full citizen of Sparta. And if you have not, you have to shave and become a free but not equal citizen. And this is the greatest dishonor done, so whoa.
Yeah, can you imagine making it all the way to this point and then have to shave?
Yeah, that's 23 years you have been enduring this system. And then it's like, you are not good enough, guy. That's just shave and get over there with the girls. If you succeed, you become a member of a club that contains 15 guys, and these are your brothers in arms. And you will eat every meal together with them, and they are your fighting unit in war. So these other 14 guys are then the most important people in your life. But now, if you succeed in becoming equal, you are now extremely attractive to the Spartan women. So now all the hot teenagers and girls slightly above 20, they will be, woohoo, check it out, a new equal.
Yay. That's the quick road, gentlemen.
Sorry.
I was just saying, I was being sarcastic. That's a quick road to, you know, marital success. Just 23 short years. You two can be super attractive.
But of course, there are duties with being an equal then. But first you learn, you probably know this long before, but now you are part of the equality of the equals. So you get a plot of land, and this plot of land has exactly the same size for everybody. Even the kings have this exact plot of land. Of the same size. They are all exactly the same size. And you are assigned the helots that belong to this land. Because the helot slaves, they belong to the land and not to you. But as you are the owner of this land, they will work for you.
Right.
But they are not your slaves as chattel slaves normally are, or like slavery normal works, because they are tied to this plot of land. And now you get to build a house in Sparta. And this is the only way to build a house in Sparta. And you have to build this house yourself. You cannot have anybody helping you. And you can use exactly this amount of building material and exactly these tools. And you cannot cheat in any way. So all the houses look almost the same. So you're extremely equal. You have as much wealth and the same house as the kings.
This is incredible.
Yes, it's equality to an extreme degree. And then you have this club of 15 men.
Yeah.
Which you share every meal with. You go to war with these guys. This is an old Dorian practice. And it remains strongly alive in Sparta. And I think the other Dorians are getting rid of it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But a very important part of the old Dorian practice was that you shared a tent and you had a sun shelter during the day where you like meet with your 14 brothers. And then you have to pay a percentage of the produce of your land to your club. So if anybody has a problem with his harvest, etc., he will be protected by his 14 brothers. And
oh, I see. That makes sense.
Yes, and if you guys have to get a new tent or something, then this is taken out of your club funds.
That's really interesting. It's basically built-in social insurance.
Yes, and it's a weird system, but it seems to be truly equal in a very, very almost communistic sense.
Right.
Okay, let's look at... we have to end the life of the Spartan man then. There is a point at 60... If you get to live to be 60 in Sparta,
mm-hmm.
you become eligible for the Council of Elders. And I'll talk more about the Council of Elders then. But then you are a little more equal than the others. But then you get to make the major decisions of the state. And then at some point you die and they check the way you died. Then if you died in battle, you get a gravestone and otherwise you don't do it. There is one other way to get a tombstone, but that does not apply to men because there's a way for the women too. We'll talk about that next time.
Okay.
Let's talk about Spartan food.
Oh, man.
Good food is for weaklings. The true man should eat just what he needs. So there is some sort of black porridge-like thing that the Spartans eat. And there's a famous quote when there's a guy from another city-state, I think he was from Athens, he's in Sparta for some reason, and he gets to eat with one of these 15-man groups. And after the meal, he says, "Now I know why the Spartans do not fear death. They are already in hell." And that was after tasting Spartan food.
Well, is there any idea what is in this gruel?
I think it is very nutritious.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
There is a big problem with getting to know anything about Sparta because the Spartans feel that they can read and write as good as anybody, but they feel that writing things down about what happened, etc., it's for weaklings. So they don't record their history.
So it's too fancy?
Yeah, so we have very little from Sparta.
Hmm.
Like we have from the other city-states, like historical records and stuff. Which means that we usually get the stories of Sparta from Athens or some other city-state. And they're, of course, very critical about Sparta. So we have to take everything with a grain of salt. But now I want to talk about commerce in Sparta, about trade, about money. Because the Spartans feel that, okay, everybody else is obsessed with money. Money brings harlots and charlatans.
Sure.
Money makes people weak. So they have forbidden gold and silver, and they assign no value to gold and silver.
So do they trade?
Yes, they do, and they still probably trade with other city states. They trade like goods, which most people do anyway.
Right.
And then they have a coinage system at the later stage, and nobody has coins in 810 BC. But when coins arrive, the Spartans will make their coins of iron, because they're rich iron mines in Laconia.
Did they they pay the iron price?
Yes.
Yes.
The iron price.
Yes.
But nobody else wants these iron coins, so they are only good in Sparta.
Gotcha.
And they are extremely heavy as well, so it's very hard to carry it away from Sparta. This means that merchants, fortune tellers, harlots, and charlatans then stay clear of Sparta.
It's a good idea.
But Sparta still has a very rich culture. Some would argue that the Spartan culture is richer than any other Greek city-state, but it's very poorly recorded. But we know that they put a lot of emphasis on music, on dancing, singing, athletic games. And then the great riddle is, what did they write about? Right. I know one thing that they were totally obsessed of writing about, and that was the words of the Oracle of Delphi.
Oh, that's right, like in the movie.
Yes. And Delphi is quite far away from Sparta. But when we talk, we'll dedicate a whole episode to the Oracle of Delphi, because it's such an interesting scam. It's it's such a well-run criminal organization.
Right, and for how many hundreds of years did they... That is a long con.
Yeah, it's I think they're still going strong during the early Roman period. So
amazing.
But the Spartans are convinced that the Oracle of Delphi is real, and they will keep records of everything the Oracle says, to the Oracle's great fear. Because if the Spartans would find out that the Oracle is a scam, they would kill everyone.
Yeah.
At some point, they actually have a Spartan sitting in the room with Oracle, just frenetically writing down anything the Oracle says.
Oh my gosh.
So that's a, like a stress factor for the Oracle.
Hey, because if they go back and compare notes...
Yes.
Oh gosh.
But the Oracle is a master of being unclear.
Right.
So, but we'll talk about that. We'll make a whole episode about the Oracle. But let's now talk about how these equals were organized, because then they would need leadership of some sort.
Sure.
And there are the two kings. There are the five ephors, loosely translated as overseers, and they are the only ones whose position really changed during the course of Sparta's existence. Then there is the council of elders. And there is the gathering of the equals, the appella, or the assembly, where the equals all together make decisions. So it seems weird to have to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Two kings in this system. But this is an old Dorian tradition. The tradition is then that the Heraclid Dorian king Aristodemus died during the Dorian invasion back in the 12th century. And he had newborn twin sons, and they were both made kings. So the line, the two kingly lines come from these twin brothers who married twin sisters for some reason. And then their two eldest sons become the two kings, Aegis and Eripon. So the royal houses are the Aegidea and the Eripon today. And they worship two different sons of Zeus. They have veto power over each other, the two kings. So the two kings have to agree to make a decision. Just like the Roman consuls of later. And this will be a problem if both kings are present on the battlefield, which will lead to a spectacular Spartan defeat, because they had both kings on the battlefield. And at that point, they decide to never do that again.
Yes.
But that is much later than this. But the kings are equals. They are eating in the mess halls. They have these tiny houses.
Right.
But it is, of course, a giant status to be a king. You're also a member of the Gerousia, the Council of Elders, no matter your age. I don't know if there were ever any child kings, but you could definitely be like 25.
Sure.
King. And your main task is to be a commander in battle. So on campaign, you are the absolute ruler of the Spartan army. And this is, of course, a very important position. And it looks like a weird position to have to be hereditary, that you can't really choose who is the commander in battle. There's also, of course, the fact that kings are not of the same age normally. So being the elder king is slightly better than being the younger king. Then.
Sure.
So there's some sort of like the elder king teaches the younger king, and then he has to teach the next king. But they're still in two lines. So they could be of equal age. Okay, back to the Council of Elders then. Of course, you have as a king a position of importance in the Council of Elders. But the Council of Elders contains the two kings and 28 old guys. 28 guys who are 60 plus. And you are a member for life in the Council of Elders. And you can only get into the council as an equal if there is an open position. They will pick whoever is the most worthy. And the Council of Elders works sort of like the... I'm trying to think of the English word here. They are the... Oh, God, what's the English word? They're not parliament. They are the other.
The Senate? The House?
They are the institution that makes the motions for law suggestions and stuff like that. So they get to... If something is to change in Sparta, it has to be introduced by the Council of Elders and put before the Appella, the Assembly of Equals, which is like parliament then.
Okay. Or is it like a Supreme Court kind of deal? Do they hear it like a case, or did they just put it in front of
nothing can be brought before the Assembly of Equals unless the Council of Elders puts it there.
Okay.
So if you want something to change, you have to talk to the Council of Elders and make them propose it to the gathering of the equals.
Gotcha.
So the Council of Elders is they are the rulers of Sparta. But their position becomes more less clear when you take into account the ephors, the overseers. When Sparta starts, the ephors, you remember there are five tribes of people in Sparta. And there's one overseer, one ephor per tribe. And their first task was to oversee the agoge and make sure that everybody comes out a big, strong Spartan warrior out of the boys.
Right. School review.
But for some reason, the powers of the ethers increase over time. So they become very important in ruling Sparta and sort of controlling the Council of Elders. And they, from 754 BC, they had a very weird task of declaring war on the Helots, on the slaves of Sparta.
Why?
Because the gods didn't like if you killed your slaves or if you shed your slaves' blood.
Right.
Because the Helots were protected by the gods. But the Spartans had the right to shed blood in war. So the ephors are in control of the war on Sparta slaves. And this will get out of hand and be the relationship between the equals and the Helots is, it's infected. And it's a source for problems for the Spartan state.
Yeah, because that's crazy.
And you might have heard the legend that in order to become a Spartan man, you have to kill a slave. You have to go out into the field and kill one of the Helots. And not get caught, because the guy who owns the plot of land that the Helot is working, he will try to protect his Helot.
Right.
And you can't fight him because he's a Spartan equal. So you have to murder one of his slaves. And this is somewhat true, but not entirely true. So let's get over to the assembly, the gathering of the equals, the Appella. This is a truly equal parliament, then, where everybody has one vote, okay. Everybody is allowed to speak, and all the equals rule Sparta together in these important matters. So they will approve or reject any motion the Council of Elders puts forward. So if the Council of Elders is way out of line, they will just get voted down here. They cannot really change anything in Sparta without the approval of the other equals.
Okay.
So in some sense, the people rule Sparta. But it's this very, very special system. Okay, then, a lot of people are free in Sparta, but are not equals.
Right.
If you are in, there are different ways of ending up in this position. You could be a slave that you are emancipated, you are given your freedom. And if you are a slave or you get freedom, then you become free but not an equal. If you are a foreigner in Sparta, I think Spartan attitude on foreigners in Sparta, of course, is very dependent on Spartan diplomacy. But there are foreigners in Sparta. They are then considered free, but not equals. You could also be one of those guys that failed the agoge.
Yep.
And I wonder if foreigners are allowed to have beard.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting. Now, did they have a special way they wore them, like no mustache?
So it is just like the Amish.
Okay, just like the Amish.
Yes, just like the Amish.
So maybe if you had a mustache, you could have a beard, just so people would know that you're not.
That might be the very reason they have that beard that way, because most people with beards would have mustaches.
Yeah, just like me and my beautiful facial hair.
Yes. You would have to shave a part of that to this. But we have to look further into this and make a new episode called Spartan Beards.
Spartan Beards, yes.
One other way to be free but non-equal.
Okay.
And when you read about Sparta, you often hear this term applied to everyone who is not free but non-equal. But this is a special status. You are one of the Periosii. Periosii are part of the eunomia. They are part of what Lycurgus said. When the Spartan state emerged from the five villages, there were about 100 other villages in Laconia that were under Spartan control. and we can name 80 of these villages. And the Sparta chose to freeze these villages at their current state of development. So they were not allowed to grow too much. Or they were like controlled by Sparta, but they were not part of the city of Sparta. And the inhabitants of these cities, these villages were the Periosii, which means the dwellers around. That's the people that live nearby, pretty much.
Okay.
And these people are not allowed to make, to have any foreign policy. They have to look to Sparta and ask Sparta about anything involving foreigners outside of Laconia. But they are, have some independence then in the local affairs. They don't have this system. They are forced to pay to the Spartan state. And they owe military service to the kings of Laconia. And the kings of Laconia happens to be the kings of Sparta. So another duty or advantage of being the king is that you rule these other places nearby. And if Sparta conquers something, they might give this status to conquered places. So they become the Periosia. It's a bit like the Latins in Roman affairs.
Okay.
But there was another place nearby Sparta that were not allowed to get this status. And it's a special place called Helos. You notice the name?
Yeah.
The slaves are the Helots.
Helots, right.
And this place is called Helos. Could be connected. This was a town that owned rich lands by the mouth of the Eurotas, the great river of Laconia.
Right.
They had open access to the sea, and they resisted Sparta for a long time, and they got military aid from Argos. Argos, always the main Dorian rival of Dorian supremacy in Greece. So Argos is also like, we are cool Dorian fighters. And we are better than the Spartans, and this is a rivalry that will be going on forever. So there are two theories about the town of Helos. The first theory is that these people became the Helots. And by 750 BC, the Sparta is in control of all of Laconia. And by then, Helos must have been conquered, and they became the Helots. So why this harsh treatment of this one place? Because they just resisted Sparta. But theory two is that they are not the Helots, and that maybe their name was just taken to name the slave class. And this is a dispute that already raged in antiquity. But if, after the Messenian Wars, we'll talk about the first Messenian War in a whole episode as well. After the Messenian War between Sparta and Messenia,
okay,
the Messenians will become Helot slaves. But there were already Helots around before this. And the Helot system, this system of slavery, is not attributed to Lycurgus. And it seems to predate Sparta, because a similar system exists in other Dorian states. So it's like an archaic way of serfdom. And it's very different when you read about this. In some sources, it's the most miserable slave position in the world to be a Helot. And there are constant slave rebellions and these wars against the Helots. And the big problem for Sparta is that there are normally like 7 Helots for every equal.
Wow.
And there's always a shortage of equals and always an abundance of Helots. But it's very complicated, the Helot system, and it's very hard to understand it. For example, we don't know, it seems, if there were other slaves in Sparta. So the rest of Greece had the chattel slaves, like normal slaves. What do you think about when you think about ancient slaves? So maybe they also existed in Sparta, being owned by people and not assigned to the land, etc. But let's talk about what it means to be a Helot. you belong to this plot of land. And you have to work the land. But you get to keep 50% of what you produce from the land.
Really?
Yes, and that sounds better than most slaves, right?
Yeah. It's like most slaves wouldn't get any.
Yeah, and you have rights, because if your master tries to overwork you or take more than 50%, he is cursed by the gods.
Wow.
And the Spartans really believe in the gods, so they generally avoid this. So they will take 50% of your produce, but they will let you keep the rest. And also, if you have male children, they go through the first stage of a Spartan boy. They are judged by the Council of Elders, and they are exposed and killed if they are not worthy. So the Helots have some sort of... They got rid of their weaklings as well.
Hmm.
And then we have to talk about this relationship, of course, between Helots and equals. It's strange and hard to understand. And it becomes harder when you think about the Kryptai, the secret police of Sparta.
Secret police?
Yes. So the Kryptai is part of the Agoge. Some say that Lycurgus introduced this as well. And okay. This is a way, sort of an extracurricular activity during the Agoge. So if you are like, if you feel like you can do more than the other boys, you can become part of the secret police. And the secret police main task is to murder the strongest of the Helots to reduce the chance of a successful slave rebellion.
Wow.
And imagine what this does with Helot morality.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're the best Helot, you work really good, you produce a lot for your master, you will get killed by the secret police.
This seems counterproductive, but I guess they don't want any kind of uprising, or they want to minimize the effectiveness.
And I guess the main proof that this system, that it wasn't all sunshine and daisies to be a Helot, is the extreme slave uprisings in Sparta. we'll talk about them later, but there's always like constant war with the Helots. In some way, it's weird. It's super weird.
That is. I don't get it, but I guess it worked for them for a few hundred years.
But now we have to look at the one thing everybody wonders about Sparta. Were the Spartans really the best warriors of their time?
Right.
And I would like to argue that, yes, they were. If a Spartan army already at this early stage faced any other army in equal numbers, the edge would be the Spartans. Even Spartans versus Assyrians at this time. And let me explain why. Because the Spartan man has no profession. You're only allowed to have a profession if you are free but not equal. So most like blacksmiths and people who do clothes and make shoes, etc., they are not equals. Because a Spartan equal will spend his entire life thinking only about battle. If he's not fighting, he's training to fight. He's training together with his club. He is practicing teamwork, fitness all the time. So you have these extremely well-trained guys.
Right.
And they are in better shape than anyone else. As I said, when the phalanx shows up, they become the masters of phalanx maneuvers. And they will drill their phalanx maneuvers so well. So there are things that a Spartan phalanx can do that no other phalanx can do in Greece. if you look into phalanx warfare then of the 6th and 5th century BC, the Spartan phalanx can go backwards. They can turn faster than anybody else. And they are truly fearsome warriors. And it's amazing that they train very little at using their weapons. Their focus is always fitness and teamwork.
Right.
But that goes pretty far in ancient warfare.
Yeah, if you can move as a single unit, you are going to outlast the throng if you're just being, like you see the giant open fields of people yelling and screaming and running across the battlefield. If you can just stay together, you've got to have an edge.
Yes. And from about 650 BC, it's clear to most people in Greece that the Spartans are the best warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And Argos will, of course, argue against this and other places as well. But there is a Spartan PR machine as well. So the Spartans will work to maintain this rumor of them being fearsome fighters. So the rumor of Spartan warriors spreads a lot. So in the Roman times, for example, in the Roman war against Carthage, they know that when Carthage hires a Spartan general, they're like, oh no, it's the Spartans.
The name alone.
So why did Sparta not conquer the world?
Right.
First, they had no interest. They didn't get any colonies. They didn't take part of the great colony movement. They didn't colonize the Mediterranean. They will make only one colony during all the time of Sparta, and that colony has a very special history. It's during the First Messenian War,
mm-hmm.
and I'll tell that story then. They do sometimes conquer area, but then it's on land, and it's nearby Sparta. But they have no interest in the sea, so they are very weak to naval
right.
warfare.
They don't. They're afraid of it.
I think they're not afraid of it. They're just not interested.
Oh,
they don't
okay.
see the game because they don't care about wealth.
Oh, that's true. You don't care about the spice trade because you eat. Yeah, you eat. You know, basically nutrient paste.
Yes, and if you put spices on your nutrient paste, everybody will laugh at you. But the greatest weakness of Sparta, then, is always the low number of equals. And it's a constant problem during Sparta's time that they can't have enough equals. And these equals die in battle. People don't qualify to become an equal.
Right.
So the number of equals is always the problem. It's always what they care the most about. Like, will the equals die out? Will the helots overtake Sparta?
Yeah, and I'm assuming they would never consider lowering their standards.
When things get really tough, they will consider arming the non-equals, because the Periosii, they fight in the Spartan army. But okay. then you could arm the other guys as well, the foreigners, the failed Spartans. Everybody gets weapons. And they will also arm the helots in times of gigantic crisis, but that's so dangerous. Because if the helots are armed, they will think about their position in society.
You don't want the helots thinking.
So if you are a Spartan equal, you're a great warrior, but you get tired of this equality system, there is a way out, particularly later in Sparta. Because you can go abroad and become a mercenary.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And if you become a mercenary, then you don't have to partake in the strict Spartan state. So you will, and of course, Spartans are sought after as mercenaries. So Spartan generals will pop up every now and then in different wars as mercenaries.
That's interesting.
And I guess this was encouraged by the Gerousi as a way to get people who really wanted to fight to find someone to fight. But I'm not sure what the Spartan state thought of this, but it's a fact that there are Spartan mercenaries in later years. And that they are, of course, then really good at fighting.
Right. I would assume they're just forgotten about. They don't seem like holding grudge kind of people.
You will also see exiled Spartans from time to time later.
Mm-hmm.
And they care a lot about Sparta. They really miss Sparta. And you will see enemies of Sparta even have Spartan kings in their employ, because the king could be exiled if he didn't do his job.
Right.
And the most famous one, of course, is the Spartan king working for Xerxes in the Great War.
Right.
Let's talk a little about Spartan religion and then end this episode.
Sounds good.
The Spartans really like... this is before 500 BC. Then the religion changes quite a bit. But they really like the Oracle of Delphi, as I said. There is a cult called Hyacinthus of Amyclae. And Amyclae was a special place because it was there were a cooperation between Dorians and Achaeans, the original, in air quotes, inhabitants of Greece.
Right.
And I think this was a very important cult for the first 3 centuries of Sparta. And I think they pointed to this cult to show that they were not going to kill every Achaean in Greece. And they seem to have pretty good relationships to the Achaeans. And when they fight, it's often against other Dorians, like in the Messenian Wars. There's also Athena Polyaucus. She is the guardian of the city of Sparta. Artemis Orthia is another important goddess. There is worship in Sparta, as I mentioned in the last episode, of Menelaus and Helen from the Iliad. Because the Iliad is so popular that they consider it reality. And as we talked about last time, Menelaus and Helen, and that Sparta of the Iliad probably did not exist at all. But there will be temples to the old Spartan king Menelaus then, who doesn't even fit into the royal length, or the lines of the kings. But they don't care about that. They think he's so cool and everybody's talking about Iliad. So they're like, oh, wow, he's our guy. He was a Spartan. And if he existed, he was definitely not a Spartan. There is a great wave of temple building all over Greece starting in 800 BC. And the religion is a very important reason why the Spartans become Hellenes, why they become Greeks instead of Dorians.
Okay.
The spread of the Greek identity is a big thing in the 8th century BC. And the main reasons for this spread is religion, common language, which develops, and the Iliad, the stories of Homer, and some other authors as well. But this, the dream of the heroic age, that was before this age, unites the Greeks into becoming the Hellenes. And the word Greek is... Did I talk about that last time? I think I have mentioned it. But the word Greek is just the term that the Romans invented. And it's actually wrong, because it was one group of people called the Graeci. And the Romans just thought, okay, everybody over there is a Greek.
Everybody's, yeah.
But the correct term is Hellenes. And the Spartans are then extremely conservative, as I said, and they are also very religious. And they will make really bad strategic calls based on religion, as very, very nicely depicted in 300.
Right.
When they can't send the army because it's against the religion. And that was one of the things that were actually true about the Battle of Thermopylae. That they couldn't send the army because it was against the religion. So Leonidas had to go by himself, and he could only bring his personal bodyguard of 300 guys.
Yeah, 300.
Which is a pretty excessive bodyguard. So that's it. Any questions on being a man in Sparta?
Seems real hard.
Yes, definitely very hard.
I can see how when people get exiled, they would miss. I mean, if you were with your brothers all the time, constantly, you would have a hard time coping.
Yes, and then you are stuck in Athens, and you're like, "Oh, where are my brothers? Who am I going to eat with?" And the Athenians are like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, dude, you're sitting real close. Go eat somewhere else.
Yes, and you watch Plato singing praise for a boy's beauty. You're like, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
guy is a pedophile.
Right.
This is weird. So the Spartans, I think they had a hard time fitting in anywhere else.
I can imagine. They're extremely unique. All right. Well, what is coming up in our next episode?
Well, next time we'll talk about being a woman in Sparta. And we'll also talk about Spartan sexuality.
Dun, dun, dun. We already know that they are
extremely... You don't know everything about Spartan sexuality, but you will at the next episode.
All right. So tune in for that, because that will be enlightening. Also, we would like to tell you about our other ventures, our other podcasts, our other creative outlets.
Yes. We are not far from the beginning of season 6 of Game of Thrones, and I do a podcast about Game of Thrones called Game of Thrones Chat. It's on iTunes, and actually in the 10th episode of season 5, I did it with Brennan.
Yes, I stepped in and gave my opinions. And what, oddly enough, this season, the author has not written a lot of what's happened in this season, but I speculated on it in that particular podcast. So we'll have to find out if I was correct in my speculation.
Definitely. So check out Game of Thrones Chat when Game of Thrones begins again. Me and Brennan also run a YouTube channel and do a podcast about Magic the Gathering, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say anything about that?
We put a lot of effort in that. And if you enjoy strategic games, I think our channel is very good at those who are just getting started in their gameplay and those who just have an interest, but not a lot of money. We do concentrate a whole lot on budget formats. So if those kind of games appeal to you, I would highly recommend our channel of YouTube/ Magic Gathering Strat. We have a cultivated environment there of videos and video makers, so we're all pretty pleasant.
Yeah, and I'll stress that we do look a lot at budget ways of playing Magic. Magic can be very, very expensive and turn people off that way.
True.
And if you feel that you want to spend less money on Magic, so go to our channel, because we'll talk about cheap ways of playing Magic.
Precisely.
Those are the English podcasts. I do 2 podcasts in Swedish. So if you understand Swedish, you can check out my podcast Palmemordet, about the murder of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. You can also check out Sagan om Isfolket-podden about Margit Sandemo's great epic book series of 47 books going over 400 years. Which prolific. Contains a lot of magical stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah, and of course you should support this podcast by going to patreon.com/fanofhistory. Because the podcast, as it looks now, will proceed down to the destruction of Sennacherib, the great event of 701 BC. But we're looking for funding to continue the podcast further, and we need $30. So that's not a lot. So if you feel that you could contribute $1 or $2 for every episode of Fan of History, go to patreon.com/fanofhistory.
Yeah, we don't. We're not trying to become rich, but it would be nice to maybe get a new mic, maybe some to pay our monthly X split recording softwares, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we are on Facebook as Fan of History. For some reason, the Facebook page is our most popular outlet. We're on Twitter as The Fan of History. There is a blog at thefanofhistorywordpress.com. It contains fantastic articles about the really ancient history, because I'm doing a series on YouTube together with Shane Sowersby called Timeline of World History, mm-hmm. which is detailing all of world history starting at 200,000 BC. So if you think the Spartans are way too modern for you, that's the serious look at it. We just published the episode about 7,100 BC and Kathal Eyuk.
Amazing.
An amazing city where 8,000 people lived in houses without windows and buried their grandmothers underneath their beds.
Because you want to know where grandma is, right?
Yeah, but they didn't bury her head because that could be kept around as a religious thing. So you had grandma's head on the wall.
That's weird.
Yes, check out Timeline of World History on our YouTube channel. Okay, I think I'm done plugging.
Okay.
iTunes reviews.
iTunes, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We will share it, talk about it. Even if it's bad, just give us something.
Yep.
All right. Well, for this week, I am Brennan.
I'm Dan.
And this has been The Fan of History.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.